Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your home today. Are you having water leak issues around your home or in your home? John Freiberger is back with us. John Freiberger is the owner of Freiberger Construction Consulting, a registered home inspector, and a lot of experience in restoring older homes as well. So if you have questions about water damage, or maybe you're building and want advice on wall systems that keep the water out, you may have some other home improvement questions, I hope you'll call in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post a question or comment on our Facebook page. Look for the Larry Mueller Show. John Freiberger, welcome back. Thanks for coming by.
Glad to be back here with you, Larry.
And I tell you what, water, we've had no shortage of water in a lot of Wisconsin here, and I think you're probably seeing more leaks in homes in your business.
This has certainly been a record year. My area of Dane County had over 30 inches in the month of July. And what happened, Larry, is when it rains and rains and rains and rains, things get saturated.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people have seen the soil saturated. They have puddles in their yard that last for days. Well, unfortunately, they've got some puddles in their walls, too, is what we have found. We've really had a record number of calls on leaking houses, and especially leaking masonry houses.
Oh, especially masonry houses. Okay. At this point, you're looking at all that water. What the heck is there to do about it?
Well, that's what's so difficult, Larry, is masonry absorbs water, or we know that all masonry veneer leaks if we hose test it. Even a really, really good mason cannot build a wall where some moisture is not going to come through the joints in the brick and the stone. So this water comes in, and it doesn't get to dry because it rains all day, and it rains all night, and it rains all the next day. And what we're finding is that we have people whose houses are now, well, we've had several where rooms or entire buildings have become unlivable.
Oh, my goodness.
Because things are wet enough, and the water barrier was breached, and the oriented strand board and the studs in the wall started rotting. And the houses filled with mold, and people got sick. So we've had some really very serious situations where we've had wetting to the extent that we're doing structural damage to buildings.
So if you're a homeowner, you know, obviously if there's water coming out of the walls and on the floor, I guess you know that. But what do you check? What do you look around for?
Well, on the inside, a good place to check, especially if you have a multi-story house, is the heads of the windows, the top part of the windows.
Okay.
Now, if you see little brown stains up there, that's a little bit worrisome because most windows in Wisconsin are not flash correctly. So if water gets behind the wood siding or the vinyl siding, gets behind the water barrier, behind the stone, you're often going to find some leaks coming in there. If you have a masonry exterior, there's two things to watch for. The most obvious is something called efflorescence. And most of us have seen this in our concrete basements. And this is that sort of white powder or gray sort of staining that we see in the concrete, usually real low on the wall, down where the concrete wall meets the concrete floor. And this is low levels of moisture, really vapor coming through and then depositing minerals and salts on the surface. If we find that on the exterior of our houses, we know that we've got some saturation and that as that water is moving to the exterior, it's chemically changing the bricks or the stone or the mortar. The other thing we can watch for is we have to go outside a couple times as this place dries. And if we find after a couple of hours that most of our mortar is back to the sort of gray we usually see, where there's that spot up where the porch roof meets the stone, and that's still a different color. That is suggesting that we're getting some water in, at least on that area of the veneer. So veneer does give us signs that it's wet.
Okay. All right. So, and if you're building, you know, what if you're, I mean, are there things you can, let me take this further from what you were just talking about. If you see that, what the heck do you do?
Well, The wonderful thing about bad masonry is we have more and more of it. So now we've developed techniques and tools.
Okay.
So we have tools now where we can come and, with a little machine, take a single brick out of the side of your house without damaging anything else. We're not up there pounding at it with chisels or grinders the way we did in the old days, but we actually have forensic masonry tools. So we can take a brick out. We can see what's going on in back. We can do moisture testing. If the one-inch air space that's supposed to be there is there, we can put in fiber optic equipment. We can look around inside the walls. So we have developed a lot of techniques to be able to get an idea of what is going on. Visual inspection is also very important. If I inspect a masonry home, the first thing I'm looking for is the efflorescence that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
I'm also looking for stains. If I'm seeing brown stains that have basically tannic acid in them, then I know we've got some wood structural issues. Then I'm looking for cracks, because if the structure, the backup wall behind the masonry, is changing, I'm going to see cracks. I looked at a house last week out in Middleton, and there was a horizontal crack every 3 feet. And what we discovered is that the structure was improperly constructed, and the masonry, which was a thin applied veneer masonry, was actually pulling the sheathing down the wall.
Oh, boy.
Yes, complete reconstruction is about the only way to manage that.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
So stains, anything that is in one area that you don't expect to find, like efflorescence, and cracking are all indications that we have issues. And Larry, the one thing I've gotten really concerned with this summer is a lot of us live in these old country farmhouses. And we've got the soft cream city brick or Janesville brick or Chicago Commons on the exterior. We have no airspace behind it. We have no weeps at the bottom. And these old houses are wonderful because they're built out of white pine, old growth wood. They just won't rot.
Yeah.
And most of them have got a layer of tar paper in back. But this year, as wet as it has been, I'm worried about a lot of these old farmhouses and their inability to dry. I mean, this July could have been the year that some houses that have been fine for 100 years finally developed some issues. So I would encourage people that have these old houses, be it in the city or out in the country, to take a walk around and look for damage.
We have lots of callers online. Let's go to Mike first in Madison. Mike, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. Well, I have a leakage concern of a different type. I was taking a bath recently, and I happened to bump the built-in ceramic soap dish, and it just popped right off the wall. And looked behind it, and it felt like the drywall or whatever was there was quite wet and crumbly. And so now I'm concerned, do I have a water leakage issue in the walls behind my tub?
Okay.
Well, Mike, you can inspect the exterior. I'm assuming this tub must be on an outside wall. But I suspect...
No, it's not.
It's on an inside wall. Okay. Then what we probably have is we have a ceramic installer who took the cheap route. And there used to be this stuff, well, I think it's still out there, sort of a green or blue-colored drywall, and they say it's water-resistant. Well, water-resistant and waterproof are two totally different things.
Mm.
So if this is actually drywall, even if it was this water-resistant type, over the years, the little fine cracks in the grout are going to allow moisture through. And that drywall, which basically has a paper face on it and then just calcium sulfite pressed together, is going to start to deteriorate. So what you probably are seeing is deterioration due to a small area leak. Now, a good ceramic installer can probably come in, do a little bit of a cutout in there, do some patching in for you, glue that soap dish back on, and then you can get one of these nice silicone sealers that you can get at most of the tile places, and you can seal the heck out of your grout once you've checked all your grout, to get a few more years or maybe another decade out of that tub. But if it's on drywall, that's a weak system. And at some point, you're probably going to want to remodel that bathroom anyway. But some good careful maintenance, interview the tile people so that they know so that they have the skills. And I know Madison has got a bunch of really good people that install and can fix tile.
Yeah. So there we go.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Mary in Waukesha up next with a question. Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Morning. What can we do for you?
My question is this. My husband and I have been in a 100, well, it's now 110 years old, Sears Craftsman house from the catalog. The outside is all stucco. The roof has been done with a 60-year shingle. We've had no problems for many, many years. The roof was done probably 12 years ago. Within the last 2 weeks, we've had some driving rains that were coming from the west, and we've had a little trickle of water above the mantle in the living room, and of course, there's a fireplace right there. The chimney has been done. We are wondering if that is more of an indication of a failure in the flashing.
Mary, what do you mean the chimney has been done?
Yeah. Oh, it's been taken down to the roof line and completely rebuilt. Yes, sir.
And they've got a through wall flashing there, and they've got an overhanging cap, and that cap has got a little drip kerf underneath it.
Oh, I'm sure it does. I haven't been up there in probably 30 years. But the chimney was, we had the chimney done once many, many years ago when we first moved in, and we've had it done a second time. We've had no problems whatsoever until the last 2 weeks with the two driving rainstorms.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly could be the flashing, Mary, because flashing is not tight. I mean, the idea of flashing is that it's on a slope, so the water drains down. And if we've got a bad driving wind that actually can push water uphill, yes, we could indeed end up with water being blown up and under the flashing. So if you're pretty sure that the brick on that chimney is nice and tight, and I don't know what type of brick it is, brick 100 years ago was pretty permeable.
Yes.
And if you've replaced this with the type of brick that was developed in the 50s and 60s where we had high temperature kilns and the brick was really tight and we started using Portland cement mortars, those certainly leak less than the chimney did when that house was brand new. We were using a lime mortar and a fairly permeable brick.
Okay.
I think about the only thing you can do if it has not leaked when there hasn't been driving rain, then perhaps it is not due to masonry saturation, and perhaps you are correct on the flashing. And there is not a lot you can do about that. You can get a little bit more scope on the flashing. That is, you can get your overlaps a bit longer. If this is something that persists, then you'll probably want to have your mason come up and do this, not your roofer. Now, I'm hoping that this is a step-type counter-flashing on that chimney. So in other words, it's not just a straight line of flashing caulk to the brick, but it's stepped.
I don't know.
Okay.
I think it is stepped. I believe that it is, but I'm not 100% certain on that.
The step flashings are much better than the straight flashings. The straight flashings rely upon a bead of caulk at the top. Caulk can often fail. And so maybe take out your binoculars and instead of bird watching, take a little bit of a look at that chimney. And if you suspect there's any kind of problem, give a call to the mason who did the work. My guess is he'll probably come back and go up there and take a look at it for you for free.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much for your help. I appreciate it. Have a good day, gentlemen.
You as well. Thank you, Mary, for calling. John Freiberger of Freiberger Construction Consulting of Fitchburg. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. John Freiberger, our guest today, it's Freiberger Construction Consulting of Fitchburg, and we're talking a whole bunch of things. We had home improvement in general, but we've zeroed in a little bit on walls that leak with John. The lines are all filled. The number is 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Let's go to Lavina next in Bayside. Lavina, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I'm calling about the side of my home. It is siding. And between the first and second floor, there seems to be a line of water from the west side of the house going about three-quarters of the way of my living room. And then I get this huge drip going into my living room. I can't figure out why the water would come underneath the bedroom but on top of the living room.
So it's coming, the water leak is seems to be coming from the second floor, but it's probably between the second and first floors.
I'm not, space. Well, there isn't anything above there that would have a water pipe.
Yeah. Well, I bet John has some ideas about that. John, what do you think?
I'm assuming you probably live in an older house.
78.
Yes. And you're in a neighborhood that can get some pretty good wind off the lake if it's
a base. Oh, very much so.
Yes, certainly. So what we can do now, I'll bet that if I dropped a marble near the outside wall of your house, it would roll towards the middle of the house. That's sort of typical. That's sort of typical in old houses.
Right, okay.
Because over the years, things compress and shrink.
So, well, it's just so weird because now I have this huge water stain in my living room ceiling.
Yes, I think what we probably have is we have an outside wall leak or a windowsill leak, but we've got a leak in the outside, and because the second floor ceiling is it has a slope towards the center, like the first floor floor, that water is coming down possibly to a low point and then disengaging from the wood and dripping there.
Well, what would you recommend?
Well, we need to find that outside leak. So we're going to have somebody who can do a little bit of forensic work. Now, the first thing to do is to check all of your windowsills and make sure we don't have some decay in the windowsill, crack caulking. Now, your house was probably built with tar paper, but there was no way to seal the tar paper around the windows. It just, there's nothing that sticks to tar paper other than tar, and nobody did that. So you're going to want to have that inspected. Now, what you may wish to do is hire a home inspector.
Okay.
And how do you find a good home inspector? There are two different ways.
Okay.
WAHI, Wisconsin Association of Home Inspectors.
Okay.
And ASHI, American Society of Home Inspectors.
Okay.
And you can go online. And at ASHI, you can even have a request for contact that they will send out to the inspectors in your area. And you can say, I need somebody who knows something about 80-year-old houses and leaks in outside walls. ASHI will send that.
It's not quite that old.
What's that? What's 1978?
No, it was built in 1978.
Built in 78. Okay, so a newer house that still has a leak.
Right.
In 78, the house, we didn't have the uniform dwelling code. But ASHI will send that out to local inspectors, and there will be a request for direct contact, it's called. And somebody with that particular expertise of finding water intrusion will get in contact with you, and then you can have them come and get a ladder up there and do some checking. And my guess is we're going to find a problem around one of the windows.
My son just gave me a question. There, that's where the cable comes through.
Somebody drill a hole in your siding and not patch it? That'd be just like the cable guy.
Okay. Would that be the possibility?
That is a possibility. So why don't we caulk that and see if this happens again?
Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank your son. He's the one who cured it.
But if it still persists, then you're going to want to take your other advice.
That is correct, Larry.
Yeah, there we go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Bob in Green Bay up next. Bob, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
What can we do for you today, Bob?
Yes, I got a commercial building. The east wall is block. Smooth on the inside of the building, and it has that rough block look on the outside.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. That the textured exterior block.
Type block, yes. What I have found, when I have a driving east wind, it's a big wall. I will find moisture inside my office area.
Yes.
Is that very common?
Yes.
How often does that need to be redone?
Well, this is the problem. This is a weak system. The concrete masonry units, the CMUs as we call them, are porous. Your house is built of your building is built of a series of very heavy sponges that happen to be made out of concrete, but they are sponges.
Yeah.
Then you've got all of the mortar joints between them, and they always crack. And a lot of the cracks are very small. They're small enough that they act like capillaries in wood, and they will suck water in as the water runs down the wall.
Okay. I do have small cracks.
Right.
Nothing huge, nothing big. It's just your normal.
Yeah.
Right. And then there may be pressure differentials, because when that wind is blowing against the side of the building, it's sucking against the backside of the building. The air pressure inside your building may actually be lower than the outside, so water is being pulled through by air movement. These are really, really difficult buildings to deal with. Generally, what we do, if it's just common CMU, the old flat stuff, is we suggest that people do an exterior insulation finish system on them. Okay. If it is a decorative type such as yours, there are things we can do on the interior as far as getting in interior seals and water collection systems, but you're going to actually need somebody with an engineering or architectural background to be able to design that for you. Now, is this a building built in the 60s or 70s?
No, this building's only 8 years old.
How many years old?
Eight.
Yeah. 8 years old.
8 years old.
Okay, so you maybe have the plans for it then.
I believe I might, yeah.
Yes, okay. You're going to probably want to talk to a forensic engineer or architect in your area who can take a look at it and suggest how you can control the situation.
Okay.
And that can, as I said, that can be done from the interior. It's a little bit difficult, but you'll end up with a building that is extremely well insulated and pretty much airproof.
Would also painting and resealing on the outside help?
It may help, but it's very, very unlikely to cure the problems. People will sell you sealants that they claim will do anything, including cut a boat in half and seal it together, the sealant, and go canoeing in it. But I've never seen one that actually works on a large commercial building, because there is so much movement in these walls. And, you know, in Green Bay, it may be 20 below zero, and 8 months later, the side of that building's 130 degrees if there's sun on it. So the kind of expansion and contraction that you're going to get in masonry is going to keep popping joints. So you seal over all the cracks, and then new cracks appear. And unless we have a really good elastic sealer, those cracks appear almost instantly. So I would get some professional advice on this. I wouldn't buy anything until somebody can really convince you that they know what they're talking about, and you have faith in the solution that they're offering to you.
There we go.
Where would I find that person?
The Wisconsin Society of Architects has an email here in Madison, and I would email them. The other thing you can talk to is, I'm assuming this is a commercial building, if it probably has an architect who designed it.
I would imagine if I look on the print.
Well, and interestingly, I think if you call that architect's probably going to come over and try to help you, because architects in Wisconsin have 10 years of liability for any errors that they may have made.
Okay.
What we often find in Wisconsin is, you know, we've got a pretty good tradition of responsibility in this state. And often if you call somebody and say, I've got a problem, they go, I'm going to come over and help you.
Okay.
So I think I would call the architect first, give him an opportunity to look at it, tell him what the problem is, be real nice to him.
Yeah.
Treat him like a friend, and maybe he'll be your friend, and he'll come up with some ways that can make this building perform for you a little bit better.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Bob. Appreciate your call. Lee in Green Bay up next. Lee, hello. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, good morning. I'd like to ask John two questions. I'm going to be putting up, or in the process now, of putting up a four-stall garage. Number one question, best way to put on 4x8 sheeting with the 8 feet running horizontal or vertical? And then also a question on correct way to install skylights.
Uh-huh. Okay, the sheeting, what's important with the sheeting is good fasteners. If this is a large building, I would use plywood. I wouldn't use oriented strand board, because you're going to have a lot more strength with plywood and a lot more forgiveness in case of any kind of moisture intrusion. But if this is a large garage, you may want to have an engineer take a look at it. There are going to be requirements under the Uniform Dwelling Code, assuming that it applies to your garage in Green Bay, and it probably does, regarding what's called wind bracing of the walls. And so you probably want to run this past an architect or an engineer to make sure that these walls are not going to flex on you, because these walls are, what, going to be 50, 60 feet long? 56 feet long. That's a long wall. Figure 20 pounds per square foot when the wind blows on that wall, and that's what that has to withstand without flexing. So I think get a little professional support before you send this out to the contractors so that you don't get red tagged by the building inspector.
Okay.
As far as the skylights, the better quality skylights, such as the Veluxes, come with very good installation instructions and with their own flashing kits. Download the installation instructions, give them to your contractor, your roofer, because he's probably never seen them before. Make sure that he knows that you have a copy and that you're going to have your binoculars out so that these are correctly installed. But these are systems that are very Velux has done a great job over the years, as have several other manufacturers. Velux, I think, is the one that we spec most frequently because of the quality of the installation instructions.
Ah.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. There are so many, many, many of those skylights that just leak.
That is correct. About half the ones that we inspect are installed incorrectly.
I had to put one in on the third floor of my home, and I was really gritting my teeth a little bit. But it's been in there 5 years now, and so far no problems. So I'm happy. Chris in Watertown up next. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Well, here's the situation. I flipped houses with friends. They were more the experts than I, so I'll go there. So now I'm renting, side-by-side duplex, steel siding, and I feel an obligation to my landlord to tell him if there's something going on with the basement, but he has kind of a short temper. So I've been seeing, and I'm no expert about basements, horizontal or vertical cracks developing in these, it looks like slabs of cement. Like the previous caller, he said, like, every 4 feet, every 5 feet, whatever, vertical cracks. Like there's posts behind them.
Oh. There are posts, or you think there are posts?
I think they're posts. I don't know why they would be...
Supports of some sort, okay.
Because they're, like, every few feet in the cement, and then when it really, really rains heavy, the cement gets this purplish color.
Yeah.
So, should I be alarmed? Should I tell the landlord?
Let me ask you a couple of questions here, Chris. So these are cracks in the basement foundation wall. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And this is a concrete wall, concrete block wall. What sort of wall?
Well, it's a solid concrete wall.
Okay.
No blocks.
No blocks. Solid poured concrete. Okay. And then there's a crack about every 4 feet in that wall?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Vertical.
Vertical crack every 4 feet.
Every four? Approximately 4 feet, yeah.
Okay. That is a bit unusual. You are correct to spot that as an unusual situation. All concrete cracks, except for very, very expensive custom engineered concrete. But the concrete that we use in our houses cracks. Those are called curing cracks. We know that the concrete comes with water in it. When the water leaves and we have the chemical reaction, it sets up, the concrete shrinks a little bit, goes into tension, and then it'll find a weak point and it'll crack.
Mm-hmm.
Decent concrete every 10 to 12 feet. 4 feet is a little bit worrisome. Now, how old is this house, Chris?
Well, it's a ranch duplex, so I don't know. It has to be anywhere from the 1980s on.
Okay, 1980s on. And you do get some seepage through it, which is usual because you've got a crack all the way through the wall. Here's something to check for, Chris.
Sure.
Let's see if the wall is moving. If the crack, if the concrete on both sides of the crack matches up perfectly, so you take a straight edge, you just got a little 1 foot ruler, right?
Mm-hmm.
Put it across the crack, so your ruler is horizontal. And if one piece of concrete or the other has moved, there's going to be a little gap, or the ruler is going to rock back and forth. That's worrisome. If there's no movement at all, then even though this concrete is probably not the type of concrete we usually want to see, then there's no evidence of movement and there's nothing to really worry about. Does that make sense?
Okay, even though I have this crack striping through the entire basement?
Yes. Let's see if it's moving.
So I do what with a ruler?
Just take a ruler, put it horizontally across the crack.
Mm-hmm.
And you will see whether one side has moved relative to the other.
Because it won't be flush to the wall. It may not be flush to the wall. And if it's not flush to the wall, if in other words, that ruler moves a little bit.
Like if that ruler rocks like a teeter-totter, you know, a sideways teeter-totter, then we've had some movement in that wall, and then we need to have a home inspector or an engineer come and take a look at it.
It'll actually move? I'll see it move?
No. The ruler itself.
Oh.
All right?
Okay.
All right?
I'll give it a try.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Greg in Fitchburg has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Larry and John, and thanks for taking my call and also for this program. It's very useful. I have a duplex that was built in 89. It's built into a hill, so on the lower level, I've got basement. The front half of the house facing the street is basement. The back half of the house is walkout and is finished area. What do you call that kind of structure?
Basically, a ranch with a walkout.
Okay. And I recently had water leaking both into the basement area and also into the finished area.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I had two contractors come out, and I got definitely different opinions from both.
Mm-hmm.
Contractor A wanted to put in two sump pumps and some drain tiles, and he identified one of the two cracks that the contractor B didn't identify, and he wanted to fill those or seal those or something.
Mm-hmm. Probably a pressure-injected epoxy, probably.
I think so.
Yes.
And then contractor B, he basically wanted to do the same, the crack that both contractors identified in another one. And he basically suggested doing some landscaping or grading so that you get the 12 inches of run versus 1 inch of the drop away from the house.
Right.
So one guy wants to do sump pumps, the other guy pretty much wants to do regrading. Both of them wanting to fill various cracks, and I'm kind of at a loss here.
Okay. Yeah, that's a tough one, because if you can identify why and how the water is coming in, that may give you a little guidance. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a couple of things to look at in the basement, and one is, where are these cracks leaking? Are they leaking high or are they leaking low?
Okay, I don't know yet. It'd be hard for me to identify in the finished area because there's, of course, drywall up.
Right, yeah. There's drywall over it, but that is what is helpful. Now, if you look at that unfinished part of the basement in the hillside, that may give you a few clues.
Okay.
Because you might find a crack there that's leaking. You know what the snap ties are, those little metal pieces that are embedded in your wall?
I do not.
Okay. If you look at your basement wall, you're going to find little pieces of metal about every 2 to 3 feet coming through the wall. Those are the ties that held the forms together. They're made out of iron, and they snapped off when they took the forms off. If you see snap ties leaking high on the wall, that's surface water. If you see it leaking low on the wall, that's hydrostatic head pressure. If you see a lot of staining and efflorescence down where your basement walls meet the floor, that's hydrostatic head pressure. If you see both of them, well, then you've got two problems. But if we're finding cracks that are basically leaking near the top and snap ties leaking near the top, then we may find that our landscaping is going to do a great deal to, it's not going to cure the problem, but it's going to diminish the problem.
Okay.
So I would inspect that part of the basement. What you may be able to do is get a home inspector in who knows something about these things. And again, we mentioned ASHI, American Society of Home Inspectors, and WAHI, Wisconsin Association of Home Inspectors. You can go online to them, put in a query, said, I need somebody who can identify why I'm getting my water in the basement who's really knowledgeable about this, more than the average guy.
Okay.
And they will look for somebody for you and get you in contact with them.
All right. That's very good advice.
Yeah.
All right.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. John Freiberger of Freiberger Construction Consulting of Fitchburg, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Dealing with water issues around your home today with our guest, John Freiberger of Freiberger Construction Consulting of Fitchburg. I'm Larry Mueller. So happy to have you listening in today. And lots of people calling. There is an open line at 1-800-642-1234, and you can join in or email us at ideas@wpr.org or on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Let's go to Lois and Nina next. Hi, Lois. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing. What can we do for you?
So we are in a 12-year-old ranch. We have a ceiling in one of the back bedrooms. It's a north-facing wall and area. At a corner of the wall where the ceiling meets, last winter, there was like a damp spot up there. And now it is since dried and everything. We haven't had any problems, not with the rain and things like that. But who do we contact to find out about that? Is that like a roofing question? Do we tack it from the inside? I mean, it's on the, you know, near the wall, so even if we're in the attic, I don't even know that you could get down close enough to get in there and things. So,
yeah. Well, believe it or not, we can get in there.
Okay.
Thermal imaging.
All right.
You've heard Larry and I recommend many, many times that people should get an energy audit of their house.
Okay.
But you don't want to do that now. You don't want to do it when it's 70 outside and 70 inside. You want to do it in December, January, or February when it's nice and cold outside. My guess is, Lois, that you've got condensation up there.
Okay.
So you've got probably a vapor barrier less than perfect, and you've got an area that is poorly insulated. If there's one area that's poorly insulated, there may be others. So the thing to do would be to talk to an energy consultant in your area. Try to pick an independent one, not one that's working for a Smith Insulation Company, because they got something to sell you, but try to find an independent one.
Okay.
You should be able to get some names from Focus on Energy. And then in the winter, have them come and do thermal imaging. And they may recommend offer as part of the same service to do a blower door test on the house. They would depressurize your house to 50 pascals and see how many air changes you have and see if things are leaky. That way, you've got a complete set of criteria. You know where the weak spots are. You know where the good spots are. The thermal imaging is great because you'll see everything from dark blues to dark reds, and you will know where your energy is going in the winter. So I would start with that.
Okay.
You probably have some sort of vapor barrier and or insulation issue. The corners are where that happens. The north side is the coldest. So when I'm doing a home inspection, I'm looking at north wall closet interiors. And it's amazing how often I will find a little bit of condensation in there, especially if they're in the corner. So let's postpone doing anything till we have some nice cold weather.
And then
let's do a whole house analysis, because that would cost you about the same amount as to have them just come look at that corner. And you'll have a lot of science behind your future decisions.
Yeah, and Focus on Energy is a great place to go to find someone in your area who will do that and do a good job.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Tom in Nelson, it's your turn. Hi, Tom.
Oh, great. I'm on the air already.
You are.
Yeah, John, my house is celebrating its 100th anniversary.
Wonderful.
And it's a brick. And it's got this kind of, flaky limestone, I think you were talking about, mortar.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem real solid. And sure. I have the classic, what did you call it? The rain-soaking type leak?
Yeah. Right. You've got a saturation leak going on.
Saturation leak.
Yeah.
Yeah. If there's a super hard rainstorm that lasts for an hour, no leak.
Right.
Soaking rain lasts a day or 18 hours, I get a leak.
Right.
And it leaks into a portion of the house that juts out. There's a 6x10 that sticks out the back, and it comes down and into that ceiling.
Right. So there's a second floor above that addition, is that right?
Yes.
Yes, okay. So it's getting into the wall above there.
This addition I'm talking to is a ground floor.
Right. Right.
And then the second floor is, you know, is set back then. So there's a little roof jutting out over this
area.
And I replace that roof.
Sure. And that roof is probably just fine, and the flashing is just fine. But what's happening is the water is getting through the brick, running down the backside of the brick, and then it is draining in because there's no what's called a through-wall flashing.
Yeah. Now,
so, but that's something you can retrofit fairly easily.
Oh.
Where is Nelson? It's not a
town. Oh, boy, on the Mississippi River, about an hour and a half, 90 miles south of Minneapolis-St. Paul.
Okay. All right. So I don't know any Masons in that area, I'm afraid. But do a little bit of searching for somebody, a historic restoration Mason, who knows how to do these things correctly. What he'll do is he'll take off a couple of courses of brick and support the brick above it. He'll put a flashing through and integrate it into, you probably have old tar paper back there. He'll lap it up under the tar paper. That wall will continue to leak, but it'll drain to the outside before it runs into the bathroom. This is a real common repair. It's called a relief flashing.
What's that? Relief?
Relief flashing.
Or release.
Relief.
And okay.
Now, you may be able to do a little bit of investigation yourself. If you go to the American Brick Institute, American Brick Institute has more information than you really want to know. I've printed it all out, and it's 6 inches thick. But go to Technical Bulletin 7, A, B, and C.
Technical Bulletin 7.
Yes, and look at 7A, 7B, 7C. Somewhere in there, there's going to be something good on through-wall flashings.
Okay, great.
The other place you can look is at the Uniform Dwelling Code, Wisconsin Uniform Dwelling Code Commentary. That also has flashing details in it, and you can download that online for free also.
Oh, all right, fantastic.
Great.
Maybe I can fix this before I have, before I, replace the ceiling and do all that stuff.
Right. Should be an easy fix. We don't want mold or decay to get going in there, so see if you can maybe you can get
and
on that yet this fall.
I think there's already up there, so I was going to replace the ceiling and whatever from the inside, but I wanted to get the leak fixed first.
Yeah. Good idea.
Good idea. Good luck.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks very much for calling. Bev in La Crosse, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry and John. See, we have a walkout finished basement up in the bluffs in La Crosse, so we're on a steep hill. And during the 7 inches of rain and the heavy floods here, we weren't flooded, of course, but we certainly got water in our finished basement for the first time. It seemed to have come down the side of the wall that's in the dirt, and very apparent to us now that our landscaping had been sinking and we didn't have good slope landscape, but this is the first time that this has happened, so we're going to have to rectify that. We've had ServPro in to dry out the basement, put down the antimicrobial. We took up a soft floating vinyl floor, and now we're ready to think about flooring to put down. On the back of our vinyl, even where the water didn't run, there were mold spots, and the flooring people told us it seems to be that, the cement breathes and there's maybe a little bit of moisture just coming up through the cement. They're now recommending that we put on what they do in a commercial building is put on a liquid sealer on the cement, bare cement, before we put down a luxury vinyl again. Is that something you would recommend?
How old is your house, Bev?
20 years.
20 years. Okay. I'm a little surprised that there isn't a vapor barrier underneath the floor if it was built 20 years ago. I guess I would have to go back to the old Uniform Dwelling Code and see when we ask for vapor barriers under the floors, because the idea was that would help reduce the amount of moisture coming through the floor. But, of course, most of the time they got all kinds of holes torn in them. So I'm always loath to seal things, but... And I'm not sure it's going to cure the problem. But if it is a recommendation from your installer, I think you can go with it. Document everything very carefully. Now, are you using the snap together, the floating LVT system? You're not using the... Good. The nice thing about that snap together system, Bev, is in 5 years, you can pop one up and take a look at it and see see if there's any issues. Well, don't do it in 5 years. The work that these men are doing for you, because it's a contract, is going to be, they've got a 5-year warranty on it, even if they say it's a 1-year. But for workmanship and for giving you advice, it's really 5 years. So figure 3 or 4 years from now, let's pop up a piece, look at it, see if things are okay. If they aren't, then you may want to go back and speak to them again. But I think they're giving you what is probably good advice. And where I am not 100% sure of the expert of whether my advice is correct, I want to defer to the expert on site. And it sounds like you've got an expert on site, so let's talk to them.
Good. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, thanks for calling. And Bridget in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Bridget.
Hi. I have a 10-year-old ranch home. We have 10-foot ceilings in our living room, and there's a large crack that runs in the great room from living room all the way through the dining room, almost probably over 20 feet long. And it goes away in the winter. It's there in the summer. I had a builder come look at it. He said that it's the trusses, and when they expand in the summer, the crack opens up, and in the winter they contract and it closes. But he said there's really nothing I can do about it. And I'm thinking, it's really unsightly. Mm-hmm. Surely there must be something we can do to shore up the trusses or something. That's what I'm looking for.
There always is. Is this a cathedral ceiling, Bridget?
No, 10-foot flat.
10-foot flat ceiling. And where is the crack? Is it where the walls meet the ceiling?
No, the crack is from the middle of the room. It runs all the way across the ceiling into the kitchen, and now there's mm-hmm. a second one starting in the kitchen near it.
Yeah, so it's parallel to the walls.
And it's 90 degrees to the trusses.
Yes.
Yes, okay. And how wide are these rooms?
Oh, it's kind of a great room.
Mm-hmm.
So that room in total, the open space without any walls in between is probably 30 feet long.
Yeah, that's a design error. The builder's correct. Those trusses are going to move. They're picking up heat. They're picking up moisture in the summer, and they are going to expand, and they are going to cause a crack. Generally, if we're designing a system, a ceiling that large, we end up introducing an expansion joint. Usually, we can find some interesting way of hiding it. Or if nothing else, we just put in a straight expansion joint and caulk it, and it's just a straight joint in the ceiling. So I don't think there's nothing you're going to be able to do with these trusses. The trusses are probably, they're all factory engineered. They're probably just fine. It's just that wood expands and contracts. Calcium sulfite drywall does not expand and contract very much, very, very, very little. So you've got one thing moving and one not, so you end up with a crack. You may want to talk to a designer or an architect in the Green Bay area and say, can you come up with an artful way of introducing an expansion joint in the ceiling so we don't have something quite as ugly? But I think that's what you're going to have to look at as a retrofit.
We did consider, you know, sealing it up and then maybe doing a coffered ceiling. And I didn't want anybody to feel like we were trying to cover something up per se, you know. But I was told it's not going to hurt anything.
No, it really is not going to hurt anything.
Okay.
All right, there you go. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Patty in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Patty.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What have you got for us?
Well, we have a house that was built 50 years ago, and it's got, you know, concrete block foundation, except we have one room off the side where the stucco and the exterior meets the ground. And that corner now is smelling a little musty. And I'm wondering what's the proper depth that the dirt should be on the outside, or what I could do maybe to keep the moisture from coming up there or what.
Yeah.
Okay. If it's a Portland cement stucco, that can be a pretty good waterproofer. I suspect that what's happening is if you've got a concrete masonry in it or block house, that some moisture is getting through that wall and the smell is coming from some interior finishes that are getting a little bit nasty. So I think you need to have somebody knowledgeable take a look at this, either a home inspector or a contractor. You could, if this is fairly shallow, take a look at sealing that area where the grade is. So pull the grade back, put a peel and stick membrane on, maybe put in a piece of drain tile that drains to grade and relieve the hydrostatic pressure. And if you've got some mold on the interior, you should probably have somebody make a little hole in that wall and take a look at a borescope and see what's see if there's an issue there.
Yeah.
Again, a home inspector can help you with that, and we talked earlier about how to find those from ASHI or WAHI.
There we go. Thank you so much for calling. John Freiberger of Freiberger Construction Consulting of Fitchburg, our guest. We'll be back with John right after a quick look at the news. Stay with us. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking home improvement, zeroed in a bit on walls that leak but and other leaking issues, but taking other questions as well. I hope you'll join us with your own home question at 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. We're going to go right away to Mary in Richland Center. Mary, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi. I need a new roof on my house.
Okay.
And part of the house has a regular attic, and that I don't have a question on. The other part of the house has a cathedral ceiling, and I need to have the insulation redone as well because of mouse damage. Okay, the wallboard on the inside of the room is perfect. Hardly, there's just maybe one hairline crack. So rather than have it redone from the inside, since I need a new roof, I want to know about re-insulating, you know, taking off the shingles, the sheathing, take out the bad insulation, and then redoing that from the wallboard out. Okay. And I know there's couple of different ways to do it. One is called hot packing, and the other one would be to vent it. And as far as the hot packing method, I've gotten several different answers to how that should be done. But I guess I would like to hear what John has to say.
All right.
Let me ask you one question first, Mary.
Sure.
Well, no, I'm going to ask you two questions. Sorry. What year was the house constructed?
1979.
So it has trusses supporting the cathedral ceiling, is that right?
Yes, and they're 8 inches.
They're 8 inches tall. Okay, so then it isn't trusses. It's probably TGIs or some sort of laminated structural wood, is that right? So there's eight inches between the wallboard and the roof all the way across the cathedral ceiling, right?
Correct.
Okay, good. Well, you are one very smart person. You've identified the perfect time to do this, and you are right. Doing it from above is the way to do it. What you need to decide is how well you want that insulated. You really want to have an inch of airspace underneath your shingles so that your shingles do not overheat.
Okay, so, I was thinking about having a metal roof put on.
Same situation.
Okay.
We want to make sure that we don't have condensation and things. So we've got about 7 inches to work with, and we really want to be above R40 or closer to R50. So if you use a spray urethane, we're going to be in about the R44 to R45 if we have it done with a spray urethane from the top. The nice thing about the spray urethane is it's going to give you the thermal barrier, the air barrier, and also a vapor barrier. So you would take off the sheathing or most of the sheathing, have an insulation contractor in your area spray it in, of course, after evacuating all the old insulation with a giant vacuum truck. And that should give you a very nice and long-lived system. And then be sure to have your 1-inch open airspace with your ridge venting at the top and soffit venting at the bottom.
Okay. And what they had suggested before they put the spray insulation down is right next to the wallboard to do a thin, like half-inch insulation board so that if I would ever have to do anything with the wallboard on the inside, I wouldn't have to be breaking into that insulation. Is that a good idea or not?
No. It's a waste of time and money.
Okay.
Because if you use a spray urethane, that gives off heat and would actually damage that lower board. So I think we would just want to go ahead and talk to a good two-part spray urethane insulation contractor and have him take a good look at it and work up a plan for you.
Okay. Cost-wise?
Oh, I'm afraid I don't know. Try to, if you've got two or three contractors in your area,
Richland Center.
Richland Center. You're probably be bringing somebody out of a larger city nearby. But try to get two or three bids if you possibly can.
At least what, two.
What about blown in insulation?
The problem that you're going to have, you can use blown in insulation, and you can completely fill the cavity.
Uh-huh.
That's going to get you to about R26. So then you'd need to overlay the top of the roof with additional insulation. And many people have done that. There's a product made here in Wisconsin called Cornell Panels. You can Google them.
Okay.
You can see how they work. Basically, what it is it's foam insulation with little blocks and airspace and OSB sheathing on top of it. They basically, you just set it on top of the roof. It has its own airspace. They put it down with long spikes. You build up the fascia a little bit. We've used this on many mid-century modern houses where they simply didn't have enough space to be able to insulate well. So take a look at Cornell Panels, Wisconsin product, and we've used them many times in the past.
Okay. Since I'm having to redo the insulation due to mouse damage, is this spray insulation going to keep out any future mice?
It is certainly going to resist them because mice generally come into the house when they find warm air in the winter.
Uh-huh.
The spray insulation can be a complete air barrier as well, so you should have almost no air leaks. You might find that currently on your house that 40% of your heating costs is infiltration caused by air leaking out through your ceilings.
Okay.
So you may get rid of the mice. You may get rid of a big chunk of your utility bills at the same time as long as you do this right. And you've got two completely different options to take a look at. So make sure you're talking to some contractors who know what they're doing.
Yep. Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Anne emailed to say that she's had a bad experience with having windows replaced and she needs to have more done and she wants to know how she can find a good window replacement company and good windows.
Well, good windows is easy. There are a lot of good windows out there. And I would work with somebody who sells windows and only windows. In other words, I wouldn't go to a big box store, but I would go to a local Marvin dealer, a local Anderson dealer, a local Pella dealer, maybe even a local Colby & Colby dealer, and talk to them. What you want to make sure is we certify windows. Windows have to meet certain criteria nationally and also in Wisconsin. We don't certify installers. So as we've said many times before, let's say you pick the Marvin windows. You're going to download all of the Marvin installation instructions. You're going to have two copies, and you're going to hand one to the contractor, and you're saying, this is how I want it done. If there are any questions as to how it should be done, there are various websites out there that will give you good instructions for the installation of windows as well. As for contractors, about all you can do is call around, talk to people who have used them before, but make sure that that contractor knows that you are an informed consumer. Now, sometimes the window, if you go to the local Marvin or Anderson dealer, they will say, well, we use Jerry Smith over here a lot. He does a really good job. So that's one place to ask. The other thing is to ask family, neighbors, and friends as to who is good.
Well, there we go. Let's go to John in Highland, Wisconsin next. John, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi. We have a second house, second home in Highland. We're very fortunate. We love Wisconsin. We're kind of new to Wisconsin. I just want to say before I get to the subject of this call that we love WPR and we're subscribers and we're happy we found it.
Thank you.
Along with the great scenery, but the not so great weather.
Yeah.
Wind, I'm talking about. Now, am I allowed to say Illinois on the air?
Yes, you can.
Okay, because we have our main home is in Oak Park, Illinois, and we live in a house built in the 40s. We have a slate roof with very narrow eaves and coffered ceilings just below. And that's the problem. There's no attic ventilation. So in the summer, of course, it's 140 degrees up there. In the winter, it's so cold that we get condensation. Even the roof nails are dripping moisture. And just I have always thought, from a very elementary physics point of view, that if we just punch holes in this in the roof, all we're really going to do is draw air through the house, because there's no, as I said, there's no there's really no soffits to ventilate through. So I was wondering what to do. Nobody can give me a good answer. It's obviously got to be an entryway in the roof for the hot air to exit, or to keep the humidity low in that in the roof.
Yeah.
Did you get the picture?
This is a problem, but it is fixable. The problem is you're going to need an architect or an engineer to help you design it. What we do in these cases is we actually introduce some venting in the lower courses of shingles, which may change the pitch of the lower courses of slate just slightly. But we work in an air vent underneath the shingles where the air can come in, and that we have an opening up at the top. If this is a typical slate roof, you've probably got a 30-pound paper covering the entire roof as sort of an air barrier. So we have to get through that at the top, the bottom. But you're going to need some. You're going to need somebody. Unfortunately, you're in Oak Park.
Yeah.
So you've got all kinds of wonderful restoration architects in that area. And
so I would need a restoration architect for this.
Not somebody who's building new homes, but somebody who's done restoration work. But there's so much in Oak Park. I mean, it's sort of the center for historic restoration in Illinois.
Yeah.
That you're going to find somebody who's done this five times already.
Huh.
The other thing I would do is, I'm trying to remember the really good slate company down there, a roofing company, and I can't remember their name. It might be Richardson. But do a little bit of a search online for slate roofing contractors, query them as well, but find somebody who's designed this before so they aren't reinventing the wheel.
Yeah, believe it or not, I have asked some people who've worked on our slate roof, and they all kind of shrug their shoulders and say, I'll get back to you.
Okay, then we're going to need to talk to a historic restoration architect and the Illinois Society of Architects. If you call their office, email their office, they can probably set you up with somebody, because they're going to send a query out to members saying, is there somebody, you know, west side of Chicago who has done this before and is willing to work on it?
So your picture is that the edge of the roof would be, the slates would kind of be lifted up and there would be some kind of ventilation.
Right, and not lifted up by much. It's almost going to be invisible from the ground, probably with a narrow core vent type venting or something, so that we can get some air in there to get some air changes.
Right.
There may be some other ways of doing it that an architect may suggest. He may end up saying, well, let's add these two little gable vents here. No one's going to see it on the backside of the house. You're probably in a historic district, have a historic house. You probably have to deal with the local landmarks ordinance.
Frank Lloyd Wrong.
Right. And so this is why I'm suggesting go right to an architect. You know, Oak Park is its own little world.
Yeah, that's for sure. I love my bubble, as we say.
John, thank you.
Thank you very much, Larry.
Yeah, appreciate it. Bye-bye. All right. Well, let's see. We have Jim on Facebook says he has a 1940s home. They had the walls in the basement sealed and painted, probably a mistake. He now gets wet spots on the basement floor with heavy rain. What are his options?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Unfortunately, I don't think that Jim told us what type of walls he has. I'm going to sort of guess, Larry, that they might be concrete masonry unit walls, which have hollow cores in them. So if they have hollow cores in them and you seal them, that means all the water goes down and comes out at the basement floor level. And what you're really looking there is talking to one of the basement contractors and put in a water collection system on the interior. They actually drill into the blocks to let them drain, and they will collect the water out of the wall and put it into an underfloor system. This is done all the time, very standard systems. Multiple contractors do this, so I would have I would call that sort of person, have them inspect it, and get, as we said, two or three bits of advice and pricing from people.
Sue in Wausau, your turn now. Thanks for waiting, Sue. Hi.
Hi, yes. I'm dealing with restoring or maintaining an over 100-year-old barn. And what my question is, it's dealing with the stone masonry. Someone in the family, this was several years ago. They used something that was not, I don't even know exactly what it was that they used, but it wasn't, I believe originally it was lime mortar that would have been used with,
right,
with the stone. But they used something, what they used, it looks to be like a dark gray color.
Right, gray Portland.
What is it called?
It's gray Portland. They use the wrong stuff. And the problem is the mortar is harder than the stone, so the stone's going to break before the mortar. So we want to remove that. And what I'm going to ask you to do is to shoot me an email, and I'm going to give you my email, which is only four letters, F as in Frank, R-E-I, at chorus.net. Chorus like a group of singers, C-H-O-R-U-S. I'm asked this question so frequently that I have a complete specification, mortar recipe, history of mortar, and I will be happy to email that to you. You can give that to the mason or the family member that's working on it, and it should give you some good guidance.
Okay, so it is possible to remove that then?
Oh, yes, it is. It'll come right out.
Okay. Now, also, they use something, it looks dark brown on the outside, on the masonry outside.
I don't know what that is. That may have been a lime mortar that had a tint added to it to try to make it look historic. Because when you use new lime mortar, it's very white and the old mortar is very brown. But I'll tell you the secret, which very few people know. Mist it with coffee. It makes new mortar look old.
Well, because this mortar, the original, it still looks pretty light. So whatever they use, this dark brown, it doesn't look, aesthetically, it doesn't look good.
Look good. Well, then you may have to do a little bit of pointing there. But again, all those instructions are in the specification that I can send to you, and they've been approved by the Department of Interior, Division of Historic Restoration for work on historic buildings.
Okay. Is this something that really you should hire someone to do?
Oh, certainly.
We shouldn't be trying to do this ourselves, then.
No, you can do it yourself. The recipe that I have is mostly lime, but it's got a little bit of white Medusa Portland in it, and I call it a good throwing mortar. If you mix it right and toss it at something, it sticks. So if you can buy a few tools and follow the guideline, I mean, it's a barn after all. We're not doing the state capitol. And it's really expensive. So it might be a whole new career for you.
There you go.
Sue the barn mason.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Brian and Racine, what's on your mind?
Well, thanks for taking the call. We have a family room, and it is projects from the body of the house. It has a flat roof, rubber-covered roof. We're wondering what could be done to put insulation under the rubber roof to keep the heat in the winter.
Okay, the first thing we have to do is we have to analyze the system, Brian. We want to make sure that we don't have air movement through the rafter spaces, because if we do and we put insulation over the top, that insulation is not going to work very well because we're going to have a cold air plenum. So you can have your local roofer come in. He'll cut a square hole in the rubber roof. You can cut through the sheathing, take a look, see what you've got for existing insulation. Then he'll glue it all back together for you. So that way you have done an observation. You'll know what you've got. The nice thing about rubber roofing is you can cut it, take it off, and put it right back on again. What you may find is
we were thinking of re-roofing at this time, which is why it's a time.
Oh, good. So you can use a thermoplastic, a TPO, or a vinyl, or something that's even better than the EPDM membrane. So find out what you have, find out how deep the joists are, do a calculation of whether you want to spray foam it, whether you want to fill up the joist space and air seal the ends of them and go over the top of them. Again, you can use something like the Cornell panels. It can be placed right over the top of the roof. You can have an isocyanurate insulation made and put over the top of it. I think most knowledgeable roofers are going to understand this process, but you may want to talk to architect, engineer, or a real knowledgeable home inspector about actually designing the thermal envelope. If you want to do it yourself, you can get an R-value table from Oak Ridge National Laboratory that tells you the values of all the various insulations, although there's a whole bunch of R-value tables out there. Just Google and you'll get a whole bunch of them. And you can probably design it yourself. Shoot for at least 40. Better yet, shoot for 50.
All right.
Okay. All right. So that's an insulation factor of 50. Okay.
That's what I would aim for at this day and age. The uniform dwelling code raises it a few points, it seems, every other year. And we may as well not pay those utility bills.
Yo, I'm with you. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Jenna, have you got a quick question for us?
Yeah. So I just recently bought a house that is poured concrete across the basement floor with half walls of concrete with in-floor hydronic heat. And currently there's laminate on the floor that started peeling up because it the hydronic heat was turned on in the middle of winter, and it seeped some water into the floor. So I was curious if, one, should I have that concrete sealed? And then, two, what type of flooring can I put down on top of that concrete?
Okay, it's a little concerning that when we turn the heat on, we get water in the floor.
It was midwinter, and then it was turned on.
Yeah, but we may need to pressure test that hydronic system to make sure you don't have a leak someplace. So I think the first thing you want to do is talk to your HVAC contractor and make sure we do not have a leak in that system. Because the nice thing about hydronic heat is it drives the moisture out of the floors because it's going to push the moisture away. So it's unusual that you had a moisture issue there. Generally, with a concrete hydronic floor, as long as they're properly installed, they have the vapor barrier and the insulation underneath them, you can basically put anything down over that floor. So I think you need to probably check the mechanical system first to make sure that it's working. In that you had a previous floor that failed, to me, is a little bit worrisome. So let's start with that step and go from there.
All right. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And here we are out of time, John. Always a pleasure. Thanks so much for being with us. Look forward to your next visit on October 12th. Perfect. Thank you, John.
Thanks very much, Larry.
John Freiberger of Freiberger Construction Consulting of Fitchburg. We have a link to his site on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And he does a great job answering our home improvement questions. Tomorrow we'll be talking lawn care on Garden Talk. So I hope you'll stay with us for that. In the meantime, stick around. Lots in store.